This podcast is being sponsored by MyComicShop.com. Come visit us at ColdSlitherPodcast.com and then click on the link through our front page to MyComicShop.com. Shop there and keep the podcast going free. And you'll get new releases of comic books delivered right to your door. MyComicShop.com through ColdSlitherPodcast.com. Do it today. The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network.
Welcome to another exciting episode of the Quick Nations Comic Book Chronicles. I am your host, Tim D-O-double-G. And tonight I'm joined by the man behind the sound effects, at Agent underscore 70 on Twitter.
Yeah, what's up everybody?
And we also have at PCN underscore dirt on Twitter here with us.
I'm here in some form or another.
The image you have up now reminds me of like the villain's lair with like 100,000 panels, monitor panels up.
Well, those are covers of all the books that came out this week.
Yeah, but that's what that visual gave me the reminder of.
My secret lair, full of comic books.
Wahahaha. Make sure to go to our website, theclipnation.com, where you can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and comic book reviews. Follow our Twitter account, at CBCron. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/theclipnation. Add us to your circles on Google+. Just search for The Click Nation. Subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Search for The Click Nation. And also subscribe on YouTube. We can watch the video broadcast of Comic Book Chronicles.
That's it's right, people. YouTube. We do have video.
YouTube.com/TheClickNation. We are a part of the Cold Slither Podcast Network and the Comic Related Podcasting Networks. Go to their websites, ColdSlitherPodcast.com and ComicRelated.com. Use the hashtag CBCron on your social media websites of choice. Spread the word. You just ask that when you're talking about your comics, what you're liking, what you're not liking, so we can see them, and we may even bring them up on the show. We record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern time. So if you're at home, not doing anything around 9 p.m.-ish.
If you still Eastern haven't, time, if you've already finished binge-watching Daredevil, tune in.
Yeah, we'll be talking a little bit about Daredevil tonight, but first we always hit up our cinematic news to dive into the show.
Yep.
All right, so let's see. Marvel is developing an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. spinoff for ABC, allegedly.
What is it?
That in there.
And it's what?
No one knows. That's why it's all alleged. So yeah, people have wondered, is it going to be like Sky-related, maybe Secret Warriors or something?
That wouldn't be the worst idea if they did a Secret Warriors.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
Some people are wondering if it'd be a Deathlok series.
Hmm.
So those are just a couple of
you just piqued Dirt's interest right there.
Although, what version of Deathlok is it?
True.
The one on the show right now.
I don't watch the show right now, so I don't know what version that is.
I forget the guy's name, to be honest. The person on the show he's playing. He's just Deathlok.
Yeah.
Deathlok from the future?
No.
No, he's a guy that just got like badly injured and got robotic parts.
Oh, so it is more like the actual comic that's going on right now.
Yeah.
Well, then I might be interested.
If he gets his own show. You can get your first look at Jamie Bell as the Thing in Fantastic Four.
Oh, boy.
I mean, he looked fine. The one image they showed. I really have no opinions of this movie until it comes out. And I get to actually, you know, watch it myself. it's not a Marvel Cinematic Universe movie, so the amount of excitement is
tempered.
Yeah, it's down there, you know, with the Sony Spider-Man and Fox's X-Men movies.
Gotcha.
Well, it also has a very low standard to live up to, so it doesn't have to be really all that good to be better than the ones that were before, so that doesn't really help its case a whole lot.
Right. All right. Confirmed, the Daredevil red suit is officially revealed in the Netflix series. For those who haven't finished the series yet, it does show at some point. Won't tell you when.
Well, they kind of spoil it when you're looking it up on your Netflix queue. You know?
Do they?
Yeah, they do. Mm. Well, you know, for those of us who didn't binge watch it, we pull it up in our queue, right?
Some of us are not done with the series yet.
Exactly. So. I was about to say, yes, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Agent_70 has joined the Netflix.
Oh, congrats. Enjoying your 30 days free.
Exactly. Who knows? I might stay on. We'll see.
Yeah. You can turn it on and off as you please. I made sure to mute all Daredevil words on Twitter so I wouldn't get spoiled. Until I finished it. I actually did that with the Avengers Age of Ultron also.
I should do that. I really should do that.
Because I got tired. Even though I've been watching every clip I find online.
Really?
I don't mind watching the clips, but I don't want anyone to spoil whatever the tag is at the end. Mm. I actually want to go into this one without knowing. We'll see how long that lasts.
Right.
Just like with what we were discussing before the show.
Exactly. That
surprise didn't last long for me either. I made it, a day or two?
We'll get to that. We'll get to it.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Bryan Singer confirms Ben Hardy as Angel in X-Men Apocalypse. That is.
Actually, it looks like, Archangel.
Yeah. So they keep saying Angel, but images they keep showing is Archangel. So
yeah, he's got.
That's definitely Archangel.
Yeah, he's got scary looking wings.
Definitely Archangel. And it's more the whatchamacallit, the Clayton Crane style, too.
Yeah, actually, it does have a lot of that look, yeah.
That was a badass look, so, okay. Next up, we got Marvel Reveals Vision character poster for Avengers Age of Ultron.
I avoided that. I haven't looked at it.
Man, he looks like the Vision. And it's funny also because there's during some of the clips I've watched, during the trailer, Vision wasn't there, but there's one scene where they, I guess, digitally add him in.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, oh, so he was actually there the whole time. But they didn't want to spoil anyone in the trailer.
All right. If you don't want to be spoiled, then close your eyes for the next 10 seconds. Because there is Vision in all his glory.
Oh, that's actually my first time seeing that.
So, there you go. All right, he's gone.
Yay! Thank you. Appreciate it.
Lucy Griffiths joins AMC's Preacher adaptation.
Who is she?
Shrugs.
I don't know.
She's an actress.
We're just like.
There's the picture of her.
She was in True Blood and Robin Hood.
Okay.
There you go.
Is that the who was Robin Hood in that movie? That old guy, Kal-El's dad and Superman. What's his name? Russell Crowe.
Robin Hood. But I think there was a Robin Hood series on BBC or something that this is referring to. That would be my guess.
Okay.
So, anyway.
Wonder Woman movie shooting this fall could see multiple different costumes. And she also lost a director and then found a director.
Exactly. <game one. laughs>
Not at the same time.
Close enough.
Yeah.
Kind of chaotic there.
Yeah.
Just a bit.
So at one point, Patty Jenkins was going to direct Thor 2, but that fell through, and now she's on board for Wonder Woman. Well, at least that's someone that you know has a similar creative direction. You know, it's not just some random person who did, one music video that they're going to put in charge of a superhero movie.
I saw another director, I forget her name. She directed Punisher Warzone. She was saying how... She was saying how she told people, months or years ago, how difficult a movie Wonder Woman would be to make just because of all the expectations that come with it.
Which is probably fair.
And that's why she was saying she wasn't surprised whoever the person that was originally going to direct it had, stepped aside.
Mm.
Marcus and McFeely will write Infinity War.
And who are they?
I think they've written some other Marvel movies.
Winter Soldier.
Yeah, I was going to say Winter Soldier. Hey, and there's a Ultron. Hey, it's a commercial on TV for Avengers Age of Ultron. I haven't seen this one.
I love it. I love it. Tim is just not into avoiding this stuff at all.
Hey, as you can see, I'm in a different sitting position. I brought the desk down into the bedroom.
That is funny.
Cool. Two more weeks, people.
I'm just not having it. I'm just like, I'm not watching any more clips. No more, no more.
Fair warning, people. In two Thursdays from now, the Comic Book Chronicles episode will be late because I'll be watching probably the step in at 8 o'clock of Comic Book Chronicles.
It may just be Tim and Dirt because I know Dirt's not rushing out to go see it. And who knows if I'll be able to get on it at some point. That's pretty funny.
You know, it's I hate crowded movie theaters. I just hate them. I really do. So if I can't get a screener copy, you know, by hook or by crook, then I'll be sitting around probably waiting 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks before I go watch it on a weekday matinee.
Right. You know,
just because I hate being in a theater that's just packed with people.
I wish I had that option, Dirt. Honestly, I wish I had the option to go on a weekday, just at random, you know?
You know, when Phantom Menace came out.
Oh, God. Back then, I was going to say, considering what just came out today, right?
Right.
Talking about.
Well, when that came out, I was working for the state of Illinois. So I had one of those, like, cushy union jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So every month you got, like, a couple sick days and you got personal time that you could take. So right. I remember I had a friend who would just call on, like, a Tuesday and he'd be like, hey, let's go watch Phantom Menace again. And I'd be like, hold on. And I'd just walk into my boss's office and be like, I'm going to take a sick day the rest of the day. He'd be like, okay. And we'd just go watch Phantom Menace again.
Damn.
And I ended up watching it like 7 or 8 times in the theater just because I kept using all my sick days and personal time and just, you know, and you can save it up month after month. So I
sure.
had a week's worth of personal time. So just kept using my sick time to go watch Phantom Menace over and over.
That's funny.
I regret it now, but, you know.
you didn't know any better back then.
Exactly. That's funny.
Marvel Studios looks to hire female writing duo for Captain Marvel. And I believe they actually said who it is. Maybe that might come up in another segment here in the notes. Olivia Munn is Psylocke in X-Men Apocalypse.
Oy! I know Eclectic is probably a fan of this because I know he's into Olivia Munn. And I used to be too, but there's something about her that just doesn't, you know.
People hyped her up too much.
It was one thing when she was on, like, G4, when you're on a tiny network and you're doing a show that's just full of the tech and geek stuff, that gives you a certain likability. But then once you abandon that and you become just like a mainstream, normal, you know, actor, actress, then who cares? Like, I don't care anymore.
Another issue I had was, like, I remember it was like, she's going to be in Iron Man 2. She's going to be in Iron Man 2. And then she's in there for like 5 seconds. I was like, this is what people were hyping up?
I don't even remember her being in there.
Yeah.
Didn't she show up as like a news correspondent or something?
Yeah, she was a news person. Yeah, news person. And was literally on camera for like 5 or 10 seconds. I heard she's good in the newsroom, though. Walking Dead creator inks first look film deal with Universal. So Robert Kirkman, Skybound imprint from Image, has a Universal first look 2-year deal, I believe. Which is cool because I could totally see like Birthright or Ghosted or Nailbiter getting some type of like movie.
Are those all from Skybound?
Yeah, because Joshua Williamson doesn't. I think all his stuff is Skybound for Image. So yeah. Actually, one of those three might not be. I know Ghosted is. Nailbiter might not be. It's either Nailbiter or Birthright. One is and I think one isn't. But Manifest Destiny is also one. That's from another creative duo. So hopefully all this stuff actually gets made.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Just because they have an option or a first look doesn't mean that any of it will actually get done.
Yeah. Constantine may not be canceled by NBC. It's near the chopping block, though.
Once they put it on Netflix, I'll watch it. That's all I'm waiting for.
You want the whatever 12 or however many episodes they made on Netflix, huh?
Yeah, at least give some of us a chance to catch up and watch it before they decide. That's one of those things where, you know, TV is on such an outdated model because nowadays it's kind of like with movies. whether or not a movie does well in the theater doesn't mean the movie's a success or a failure, because there are a lot of movies that do okay in the theater, but then as soon as they hit
video,
They hit digital download, they hit Blu-ray, you know, suddenly, oh my gosh, we have a hit in our hands that they didn't know they had. So,
Marvel's aka Jessica Jones gives a first look at David Tennant's Purple Man.
What does that mean?
There's a picture of David Tennant as Purple Man in Jessica Jones. That's the next Netflix series after Daredevil, which is filming now. So people got, yep, there he is.
So there's the, okay. Huh. So a guy from a show I didn't watch on another show I'm probably not going to watch.
Possibly. You'll watch it.
Jessica Jones.
Even I'll watch it, you know, and I'm
not. It's all connected.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but I'm not watching S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
Eventually you will.
Yeah. Like, I've watched S.H.I.E.L.D., but I honestly couldn't tell you, like, half of what's going on. It's always just on in the background, just so I can get the gist of what, you know, what's going on.
Right. I enjoy S.H.I.E.L.D. for the most part, but there's some characters that I wish would just go away. So
I'm more tempted to go back and start watching Arrow.
Definitely do that.
At some point, I'll do that, too. I don't know when.
You won't like the first, like, season. It's, like you said, it's all that drama stuff you don't like.
The CW but, stuff.
Yeah, the CW drama. But really, like, after, like, season 2 and the 3, because are they on 4 now, or is this 3?
No idea.
I can't even keep up now.
Couldn't tell you.
This is season 3, I think. Season 2 is where it really picks up and gets going.
All right.
Netflix begins audio description for visually impaired, starting with Daredevil.
That's awesome.
Have you ever watched a movie with that on?
No, but it's pretty cool that you know that they have that option.
I had when I first got my Blazer, it had a DVD player in it, and I stuck in Tron Legacy, and it had that audio description soundtrack. Mm-hmm. And so since I couldn't see the screen because I'm driving, I would just put it in and I would listen to it, you know, basically describe what's happening in between the dialogue. And it actually works really well.
Cool.
All right. Guardians of the Galaxy 2 is supposedly all about dads, says James Gunn. Flash Gordon film eyes director Matthew Vaughn. The Justice League Gods and Monsters animated movie debuted its trailer.
And that was weird.
Yeah, but it's like an Elseworld.
Yeah, I didn't watch it. I read that. I read a blurb about it, and I was kind of put off by it.
Yeah, I'll be skipping that one. And actually, Batman vs. Robin came out this week, so I need to check that out.
All right.
Which also reminded me that Avengers Assemble started back either last weekend or this weekend, which I need to watch. Deadpool smashes into a car, an awesome set video.
How awesome.
I haven't watched the clip of it, so I wouldn't know.
No.
Avengers Infinity War to have more villains than just Thanos. Go figure.
Surprise, surprise.
And now the good stuff from today. Drum roll.
All right, hold on.
Star Wars The Force Awakens teaser arrives online today.
Yeah, pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Did you actually watch it, Dirk?
Yeah, about, I don't know, a dozen times in a row.
Something that got Dirt to actually watch it.
Yeah, exactly.
I know, that is saying something, isn't it?
Exactly. Oh, are we playing it now?
Although I don't think the sound will come through.
Yeah, it's not going to come through.
You're not going to get the sound, but I mean, you can take a look and see what some of the things are that stand out. I thought this opening scene with the Star Destroyer crashed on the planet was just, I mean, that just blew me away.
Yeah.
Being an opening shot there, and the little X-Wing down here in front. And we got talkie-talkie.
Yep, yappity-yap-yap-yap.
Now we've got the reasons why you don't do meth.
Like someone said, who was keeping that around for 20-plus years? Or did they just find it, maybe?
Possibly.
Maybe someone went, maybe went back and dug up some of his armor or something for a new Sith Lord. Now there's the part that sucks. This Christmas.
Because you said, Santa's delivering a nice movie to us, good children.
We hope.
As we watch Destruction and
Stormtroopers. I want to know who that chrome Stormtrooper guy is.
They said his name on a website.
Shiny chrome Stormtrooper.
Isn't that same guy with the lightsaber?
No, I think that's a different guy.
Ah.
And there's Grandpa and his dog.
We're home!
Yeah.
So that is another one that I really want to see, but I hate being in crowded movie theaters. Mm. And I think I'm just going to have to bite the bullet, though, and sit in the crowd for that one.
Yeah. That's why you go to matinees.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that might help.
That's his plan, yeah. But didn't the Ant-Man trailer come out this week, too, the second one?
It did.
And I know we didn't post anything about it, but there's a great scene in there with a toy train that I couldn't stop laughing at.
Well, it got a little overshadowed.
Just a little. I just wanted to mention that.
All right.
Roddy Cat said that Captain America Winter Soldier also has that descriptive audio. So if you've got a copy of that, you can pop it in and hit the descriptive audio and you see what that's like.
All right. I'll do that.
So today started the Star Wars Celebration Anaheim 4-5 day event. You go to theclicknation.com and find our link to the live panel or live stream that's taking place. We're all weekend. They're going to live stream over 30 hours of Star Wars related goodness. So go check that out. I clicked on it after I got home from work today, and it looked like a question and answer type thing going on. So there was a guy asking a very long-winded question at a podium. And Scarlett Johansson and Kevin Feige tease a Black Widow movie because they talked about it.
Good.
That's all they did was talk.
Good.
Of course they talked.
Of course.
Of course they talked about the movie.
Actually, they discussed a series of films.
Right.
Oh. And of course, the Debbie Downer that William Bruce West is, he had to immediately let me know that Scarlett Johansson would be old as fuck by the time that movie came out. Because it wouldn't come out until at least after 2019.
Goodness gracious, great balls of fire, man. Anyway, so, you know, there's that, right?
Did anybody see the leak of the Batman versus Superman footage?
No,
I heard someone mention it
coming out.
Yeah, it's apparently just 30 seconds from the end of the trailer that was played in some foreign country. It's got like Spanish subtitles or Portuguese subtitles or something underneath it. And you just see Batman in his armor with the glowing blue eyes and Superman basically staring down at him, and Batman's just asking him, "Can you bleed?" And then he says, "You will." And then it just goes to the logo.
Really?
Is that the same one from Is It in the Rain?
I don't know. It was very low quality.
Yes, he goes to Google it.
Here we go.
Can you bleed?
Because remember, they showed that small clip at...
So what is this Batman voice?
San Diego Comic-Con, like a year ago, or 2 years ago, or a year ago.
Yeah, and there's the shot of him in the glowing mask.
God.
Yeah, they showed this already, or at least part of the beginning part of that sequence.
What does his voice sound like? What does the Batman voice sound like? It
sounds exactly like Christian Bale doing the voice. Just
really?
With Affleck being nasal. Like, Affleck always sounds like he has a cold like I do right now.
They haven't learned, huh?
He's doing that same... Well, and it's... You know, I was watching Daredevil. Daredevil has the Batman voice, too.
His wasn't annoying.
It's not as... Right, it's not as harsh.
Yeah, but it's still... He's still... Why are you trying to kill me?
Because they all think that's how to sound macho and mask your voice.
I will protect this city.
Swear to me! Oh, wait, that was Batman. All right.
So I have to go on freaking comicbookmovie.com and look at that.
Actually, of course, the footage has been pulled.
Oh,
but
lame.
I'm sure it's one of those things that if you refresh on YouTube enough times, you know, 30,000 people are going to upload it, 30,000 of them are going to get taken down, and then another 15,000 will upload it. Just keep going back and forth.
So over to the comic book side of the news. Comic-Con is getting its own year-round video on-demand service.
Okay.
Not sure what that's all going to involve, but stay tuned.
That's weird because Wizard is part of the Con TV online network that launched, I think, about a month ago, which is all comic and pop culture, you know, videos online. And now that apparently as soon as they launched that, San Diego said, "Oh, we have to do our own." So... They're kind of playing catch-up as far as that goes now.
Hey, and speaking of the live streaming or events, I made sure to let Marvel know, hey, you see how Star Wars is doing this live streaming of panels and whatnot? Give it the program. Start doing that for some of these cons y'all go to.
You know, the thing is, a couple of years ago, we started going to C2E2 in Chicago, and we would videotape the panels and put them online on our website. And then about 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, some company came in and started streaming them online. Mm-hmm. And so we were no longer allowed to sit and videotape the entire thing because they were being streamed through whatever, I forget what service it was, what company it was. And so we just kind of gave up on it. I don't know if it's something they're still doing or if, you know, they put a whole bunch of money into it, lost a whole bunch of money, and they stopped doing it. I'll have to check on that this year. But, yeah, somebody tried doing that already.
Yeah, start it back up. I know they like to make stuff, you know, for special for the people that actually had to sit in lines to get inside and whatnot. But, come on, not everyone can make it to every freaking – at least do it for San Diego and New York Comic-Cons. Damn it.
Marvel is also rumors are Marvel is pulling out on San Diego Comic Con.
What?
Yeah, that was like from last week, wasn't it?
Or 2 weeks ago?
I totally missed it.
Yeah, because they want to do the Disney show.
They said they were going to do this one instead, or maybe there's another Disney. I'm sorry, I'm getting Disney and Star Wars mixed up. Yeah, there's a Disney one around that, like a month later or something like that. Huh. So they said just do it, save their stuff for that, their own, you know, company conference.
Well, that would suck.
Yep.
Although, I mean, I don't care. I don't go to San Diego, so.
It's Marvel Studios pulling out, not Marvel the comics, if that helps any. There just won't be any movie news at San Diego. There still be comic stuff, which is mostly what I care about anyway. Informa buys MegaCon Orlando.
Who's Informa?
A company.
Oh, okay.
You mean it's not that old 90s song?
I'm just reading the headline.
Yes, I saw. Thank you, Dirt. Thank you, Dirt. Thank you. That's funny. It's Informa, not Informer. Oh, goodness.
Over at
That's funny.
Comfort Resources, there's a spotlight interview with Ed Brubaker from WonderCon 2015 a couple weeks ago. Actually read his good read. Talks about how, you know, he doesn't miss the writing superhero comics anymore, and how he has a, you know, he writes his own comics now and has that nice deal with Sean Phillips at Image to where Image will produce whatever they want for 5 years, I believe. And he's also gotten a writing job on a HBO series that he can't announce just yet. So, like, he talked about how, you know, he got up and moved to L.A. to get writing, you know, do writing jobs. And he actually talked about how, you know, how earlier we were saying, like, hopefully all these comics getting movie and TV deals get their stuff made. And he was saying how, you know, over his 20-plus years in comics, he's had, you know, numerous, you know, television deals that just, you know, fell through. But he got paid for his work, but, you know, stuff never went to series, which happens a lot in the industry. Six indie publishers join forces for a free comic book day exclusive. Wonder which six those are.
Retrofit, Piao Studio, Oily Comics, Uncivilized Books, Study Group Comics, and Big Planet Comics. So, okay.
Yeah. Jeff Lemire has signed an exclusive deal with Marvel. Exclusive in quotes.
Yeah, apparently he can still work on some of the Image stuff.
Valiant.
Yeah, Valiant.
Because he was at their writer's retreat like 3 months ago. I was happy to see Dennis Hopeless finally get the call up, as they say.
He has exclusions for Valiant work and other work for hire titles from Image, Dark Horse, and others.
Yep. I'm a fan. So he will be helping to mold the Marvel Universe post-Secret Wars. Even though this writer's or creative retreat probably was discussing stuff that's going to come out next year. It has nothing to do with Secret Wars because they've already planned that stuff out already. Speaking of Marvel and creative people, X-Men group editor Mike Marks leaves Marvel and joins Aftershock Comics.
And there was a collective who uttered by the entire Marvel Comics fandom across the internet.
About Aftershock or who Mike Marks?
No, about Aftershock.
Oh, I thought it was a video game company or a video game at first. I was like, what?
Apparently it's a very, very, very new startup.
Run by Joe Pruitt, who actually lives here in Atlanta, I believe.
Well, it's a new company, I believe.
Yeah, the company's new. I'm just saying Joe Pruitt lives here in Atlanta. Because he was at the conference I went to, whatever it was, a couple months ago in Middle Georgia. And he actually followed me on Twitter this week because I was tweeting them about Mike Marks and whatnot. Thank you, Joe.
There you go.
Over 500 Star Wars digital comics available on Marvel Unlimited. So are these Marvel, old Marvel Star Wars comics?
These are the Dark Horse books.
Oh.
Wow.
Even better.
Wow.
That's kind of, how can they have control over the Dark Horse stuff?
Probably because all the books go with the license. So when Dark Horse got the Star Wars license, they actually got all the old Marvel books.
Oh, okay.
And they were reprinting the Marvel books for a long time. And so like when the toys would come out, the toys would have a reprint of like the original Star Wars Marvel number one, except they took out the Marvel logo and put a Dark Horse logo on it. And so they were able to reprint all of that Marvel stuff. Well, now it goes back to Marvel. They get all the Dark Horse stuff. Dark Horse can't print any more of that stuff. And anything that they have, I don't know what the deal is. If they can't advertise it, they just have to liquidate it through Diamond, or I don't think they have to pulp it. But yeah, so all of this stuff from Dark Horse is coming over to Marvel Unlimited, and it says one of the first big releases is Star Wars number one by Jason Aaron and John Cassaday, and that was their ongoing number one from 2 years ago when they launched that series. That's one of the big ones that they're pointing to. But basically all of those Star Wars Legacy and Star Wars Empire and all that stuff is coming over, which actually is great because I want to read a bunch of those. And
you used to read some of those, didn't you? Or no?
Well, every once in a while, Dark Horse would do this thing where they'd give away like the first issue or the first five issues or, you know, the first issue from a bunch of different books. And I would go out and, you know, I'd grab those free ones and read them. And then I'd be like, okay, next time they do a sale for like 99 cents or do a humble bundle or something like that, I may grab them. But I didn't read them regularly.
Oh, okay. I was going to ask you which one, your recommendations on which ones to read.
There was one series, oh, of course, now I can't think of it, written by John Ostrander. And it was basically James Bond in the Star Wars universe. Oh, Agent of the Empire is what it was called. Agent of the Empire. And it was basically this guy works for the Empire, and he's their secret agent assassin guy. And it was basically, if you took James Bond and set it in Star Wars, that's what that book was. And that was really fun. I did read that one. But that was the only one I really got into regularly. Roddy Cat points out that a lot of the old Marvel ones are also in there. I mean, granted, if you're looking at 500 issues, that's a lot to fill. So a lot of the old Marvel ones are on there too, apparently.
Yeah. That's all I need is more stuff on Marvel Unlimited to not read.
No.
Let's see what else we got. Yeah, we talked about the Marvel Celebration. Dynamite bundles up with BitTorrent to offer 200 comics.
Good for them.
Well, including Bob's Burgers?
Don't know what's in the bundle.
It's a Dynamite comic.
Oh.
Which I need to start adding those for us.
Oh, minimum payment of $6. So you've got Doctor Who. You've got Bob's Burgers. I'm trying to see what else. Oh, the Django Zorro books.
Is Shaft on there?
Shaft number one.
Okay.
Alice Cooper, Chaos. Doodle Jump. Kevin Smith's Green Hornet 1 through 10. Some Jungle Girls, Dresden Files, Kirby Genesis 0 through 8, Mark Waid's Green Hornet 1 through 6, Pathfinder 1 through 6, Twilight Zone 1 through 4. So, I mean, there's some interesting stuff on there.
The comic industry remembers Herb Trimpey.
Herb Trimp, rest in peace, man.
Excuse me?
That's all right. I'm not 100% sure it's Trimp.
Yeah.
That's why I didn't correct you. I was like, I don't know. But yeah, rest in peace, Herb Trimp. Because he definitely contributed to a lot of the Marvel that we've grown up with. So especially Mr. Snickety Snicked.
And Snick. Spoilers. You know we're not gonna say what the spoilers are.
Spoilers.
The new Batman's identity leaked online. This is post convergence. He was the person behind the armor suit Batman.
It's not Tony Stark.
The armor suit with his kung fu grip.
Ah! You mean it's not the Tick?
It is not.
It looked like the Tick.
It does, kind of.
It does.
Spoon!
It's not going too much to talk about for this because we don't want to spoil it for everyone.
Right.
I will say,
keep calling him the Tick.
The story actually is pretty funny because the character who is in this suit of armor you know, they show the suit of armor to him, and he's getting ready to climb in, and he just kind of stands there for a second. He goes, this is so stupid. Like, he just knows it's a bad idea, but, you know, what the heck, they're going to do it, so might as well get with it. And I think that's just how everybody kind of feels about the general idea of having this fake Batman in a suit of armor.
All right.
NBC's Revolution TV show returns as a digital comic with Titan Comics, I believe. No, wait, that's Net Story. With DC Comics. And The Blacklist comes to comics in July from Titan Comics.
Wait a minute. Okay, so this Revolution digital comic, it will be free on comicbook.com, and then it goes to their Facebook page.
Even better. Real quick, Dirt, got a question for you. Where did comicbook.com come from? Because it just seemed to appear out of nowhere.
I have no idea.
Did you read?
Can someone answer that?
Go for it.
Jim Viscardi, who used to be, I forget what his job was at Marvel. I think it was marketing or press, something like that.
Okay.
He left and started his Let's Talk Comics podcast, which actually hasn't updated in a couple of weeks and months. But it's a great podcast. A lot of archives you go back and listen to. He started comicbook.com. He bought the comicbook.com domain and started it up.
So no kidding.
Since he's already got all the contacts and stuff, you know, from working with Marvel, that's how they're able to get, like, you know, exclusive at comicbook.com.
Oh, because it seems to appear out of nowhere.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, it just came out of nowhere.
Well, according to this, it's been there since 2012, mm-hmm. at least. And then in 2014 is when all the investors and the big-time editors, 247 Sports founder, who started Rivals.com, which was acquired by Yahoo, joined comicbook.com, leading day-to-day operations. They relaunched with a proprietary platform. They had their message boards, their mobile site, their content management services. And then they just started basically spending money like crazy.
No kidding.
Where did you find that about portion of that?
Comicbook.com/page/about.
Cool. I never even bothered to look, you know, to kind of dig into the site to find that. It's just that I thought maybe you guys, you know, being more in tune with the internet stuff for comics, I thought you might have some input on that. So, cool. Yeah,
honestly, I very rarely look at anything online. Like, if something shows up in my Facebook feed where someone shares it with a comment, then I click on it. But otherwise, if press releases come to my mailbox, I read them. But I mm-hmm. very rarely go out to websites and look at stuff.
Okay.
That's what I do. Which I actually spend way too much time doing that.
Gotcha.
I like to stay informed, though.
No, of course. We need to be, you know, look at what we do every Thursday night at 9 o'clock.
And I also like trying to get ideas for how to do comicbookchronicles.com whenever I get that going. I did actually start working on it.
Where else are you going to find the link to a bald Will Smith for Suicide Squad?
Yeah. Here's the image up.
There you go.
Say something so I can see it.
Something. There's bald Will Smith.
Cool. So, yeah, I'll read this about later.
All right.
Okay. Need to hurry up here. Is that the... Yeah, Blacklist we talked about. Ed Piskor's Hip Hop Family Tree to go monthly from Fantagraphics.
Yeah! Congratulations.
And last but not least, because during the Star Wars, they sort of slipped this in before the Star Wars Celebration live panel or live stream began, but Star Wars Lando is going to be a limited series from Charles Soule and Alex Maleev.
It's about time.
Set before Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, it's about time.
And this will take the place of the Princess Leia series when that miniseries ends.
Ah. Cool, so they don't have too many on the racks at one time.
Well, I was looking at one of Marvel's pages talking about the Star Wars, you know, celebration event and how, you know, Marvel Comics will be there, and there's a couple panels to pay attention to, and there's one, I forget which day it is, it's, you know, Star Wars Comes Home to Marvel panel.
Where supposedly
there's not one but two big announcements planned for that one. So I'm sure it's just more series. And now it's time for me to read the ad for tonight.
Yeah.
This is the Amazon Ed, visit coldslitherpodcast.com, then click the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the top of the page. From there, scroll down and click on the Amazon link to shop. Purchase items from Amazon.com as you normally would, whether it's books, music, electronics, jewelry, apparel, etc. For every purchase made on Amazon through our link, Amazon sends the CSPN a payment that helps us keep the Chronicles podcast free for our listeners at no extra cost to you. Amazon.com through coldslitherpodcast.com. Do it today.
You'll be joining us soon.
All right.
Cool.
Someone pick a... Oh, wait. I told Roddy Cat I'd talk about the Variant and art news. Or at least mention some stuff from some art news to mention. There's a sketchbook spotlight for art, the art of Kevin Wada, the She-Hulk cover artist.
Cool.
Francesco Francavilla illustrates Ex Machina poster.
That's for the current movie, correct?
Probably.
Okay.
There's a whole bunch of nonsense going on with Frank Cho and John Spider-Gwen in the Milo Manara pose.
Yeah. Way too much going on about that.
Yeah, we don't actually, yeah. I'm just mentioning it. Not going to get into all that. Marvel announces Gwen Stacy variants for June. Adi Granoff covers for Star Wars adaptations were released. And Realities Collide and new Secret Wars variant covers.
Hmm.
All right. Anyone want to start us off with the comic this week? Or forever hold your peace.
You want to do Convergence number 2?
Do you want me to do Convergence number 2?
Yeah, why not? Because I read it.
I still need to read one.
All right, let's see. Get my screen share up on that.
Is it worth my time to actually read the main Convergence series?
Okay, here's the thing about Convergence. It's a decent story. Like, it's a solid story. It's well told. But it really is the story of Earth 2.
Right.
What happens to the Earth 2 heroes? I mean, that's technically what Convergence is what happens to the Earth 2 heroes after Earth 2 is destroyed.
Right. And what's funny about what Dirt just said is that I fully concur with Dirt's take on this. It is a very well crafted story. You know, my note on this that I left for myself is that it was surprisingly okay because it was a well done story about characters I could not care less about. Mm-hmm. So the fact that I was reading it and I was kind of like, okay, I mean, there's a great scene. There's a great scene in this between, spoiler alert. There's a great scene in this between Batman's of two worlds that are not exactly the same person. I'll leave it at that. And I kind of like that.
Yeah, if you're familiar with DC, then looking at this cover gives it away. You can spot the difference between them, and if you're familiar with the characters, you know exactly who they are.
Right.
And when they come and meet, the thing that I found interesting is that they go off to have a conversation, and we are not given that conversation.
Yes, we're not privy to it.
So something happens there, which I think also plays into what's eventually going to happen with the Batman books after Convergence, since we know that there's something happening with that character. And the fact that there's some sort of hidden conversation here, I think, plays into that.
You think so?
I think so.
Well, with the version that we know, it's the pouchy version. It's not that's like the pre-52, that pre-New 52, right?
This is the version... actually technically looks like the version that was in when David Finch did Batman Incorporated.
Okay.
Which started right before, like, you know, it got like six issues out before Flashpoint happened. Yeah.
Right.
Technically it should have been like, what, a year and a half's worth, but it's David Finch.
Right. Well, like I said, it's the pouchy version with the shiny emblem.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's how I, you know, that was my visual cue to kind of recall what era... of DC Comics we're referencing.
Although the thing is, the whole point, though, is that you may have, when we come out of this on the other side, you may have different characters and different versions of the cities from different eras being the ones that survive and come together. So you could have, Flashpoint Metropolis with Flashpoint Superman with pre-Zero Hour Batman and Golden Age Star City. I mean, you know.
And
I mean,
we obviously understand that the entire point of Convergence is not to clear things up.
But
you know what, Dirt, there's one thing I wanted to point out, and I'm flipping through, you know, I'm flipping through this week's issue. And the ending was what kind of threw me off and what kind of gave me, you know, gave me pause, because I enjoyed the story and I thought it was well crafted, but then I get to the ending, it ends on a something on something of a cliffhanger. And
with a character that you don't know?
Exactly. Thank you. Do you know who this character is?
Yes. He was from the Warlord comic book by Mike Grell.
Really?
Yeah. He was the main bad guy in that series.
My goodness.
He has come back. Of course, I forget his name.
Well, we don't spoil it.
Well, okay, sure.
It's the last page, you know what I mean? I'd rather not spoil what's on the last page, you know?
Although, one thing I do want to point out, if I can find it here. Convergence, you know, one of the things they're doing with Convergence, of course, they have all these different variants that they're doing on the books. This is the variant cover for number two. And if you look, there's a blue Superman and a red Superman. This is actually the, if you remember the Superman video game, where player one wore the blue suit and player two wore the red suit. I thought this was just an awesome, like, Easter egg type of cover.
That's where that's from. Holy cow.
Once I saw that, I was like, oh, I have to have one of these.
I did not even realize that.
I like the Tony. Is that Tony Daniel?
Yep.
So is the art good in these, in the main Convergence issue? Is it just one person, or is it like five different people? Like,
no, it's the one guy, whatever his name is, Carlo Pagulayan.
Pagulayan.
Sure, that's how you say it.
Pagulayan, no, he's Filipino, and he's the guy that did a lot of the art on Planet Hulk.
Oh, okay. All right.
You know, he worked on Planet Hulk with Greg Pak, and I remember there was a great story that Greg Pak told me once at a New York Comic Con. He had never met Carlo Pagulayan until that New York Comic Con, like years after they did Planet Hulk together.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it doesn't look like filler. Like, even though this is, you know, the series that they're doing while they're moving their offices, this was obviously done and in the books, you know, several months ago, you know, long ahead of regular production schedule so that it would be out. But I mean, it's a well-crafted story. It's just about the Earth 2 characters, which most people may not really care about. Hopefully you will care about them by the end of the series, but
nah, I still don't care about them.
Yeah. Well, you know, you can only do so much. But you know, reading through it, it is an entertaining, well-crafted story. You just might have to do some Googling here and there to kind of keep up with who's who if you're not all that familiar with the DC Universe. But then again, that's also kind of the point of the series and why they have the little handbooks in the back of each issue telling you about the characters that are featured.
I've actually seen the articles, but when do the 8-page previews start showing up for post-Convergence?
I believe it's next month.
Okay. That's all I'm concerned about, but that's what I want to check out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, let's see. I read a bunch of these, so I can kind of go through them here.
Did you read
Rapid Fire or yours if you want to?
Yeah, let me. If you've read some of these, then just kind of jump in. But I'll
just the Suicide Squad one.
Okay. Well, then I'll save that one for last.
Okay.
Shadow of the Bat is set in the era after Batman has returned from his broken back. Azrael is no longer Batman. He's back to being his character. And one problem all of these books have is that every book has to retell the story of Telos. Yeah, I don't know. But everyone has to retell the story of the day that he stands up and tells everybody that that they're going to be doing these battles. And so some of the books do it on like page 3, and some of the books do it on page 20. So on these books where they do it at the end of the book, you feel like you've read all of this stuff just to kind of remind you who the characters are, and then it actually gets to what the meat of the story is actually going to be, and that's next issue. So that's kind of where this book fits in. Everything that happens, you know, for the first 20 pages is just to remind you who the characters are and what their relationship is, and then finally at the end you get that declaration that they're going to be at war, and then the Wetworks soldiers from the Wildstorm universe appear at the end. I think they're Wetworks. They're the gold...
Yes, the Portacio characters.
Yeah, that's Wetworks, right?
Yes. Okay. No kidding!
Now they show up in this?
Yeah, so they're the ones that show up at the end.
I'm going to flip through this just to see that.
So the next issue is going to be Batman and Azrael fighting Wetworks.
Oh my god.
I guess they have Wetworks with Wildstorm, I guess?
Yeah,
Yeah,
the Wildstorm universe was, you know, purchased by DC, 15 years ago or so.
I just wasn't sure if I know if it works with Wildstorm or not.
No, it was. That was Wild's Portacio.
All right. Let's see. We've got Green Lantern Parallax, and it's got them both listed because it's both Kyle Rayner Green Lantern and Hal Jordan Parallax.
Two for
this one, though.
Kind of crowded, no?
Yeah, well, it's all right because about halfway through the book is where this one does the fight reveal, so you get a little bit more of them preparing, getting ready to fight towards the end. Part of the problem is they're fighting. I don't even know who this person was.
I love it. If you don't know.
Electropolis?
You even knew who that dude was in, you know, from the Warlord comics. I mean, geez.
Well, I think this is actually a character from Crisis on Infinite Earths, whose world was destroyed early on.
Okay.
And we see this character again, I believe, in Supergirl. But it's one of those things where she appeared in Crisis number one just so you could see her world be destroyed. And then that was really it for the character, and then they bring her and her people back for this, and you see him again in the Supergirl book. But the one thing about, you know, living in the dome is that when the cities are stolen and they're, you know, put on this prison planet, everybody lost their powers. So Hal Jordan, who had been Parallax, who had killed all the other Green Lanterns, stole all their rings, made himself super powerful so he could bring back all the people of Coast City who had been killed in that whole death and resurrection of Superman storyline, he suddenly loses all that power. And since Parallax, which we later found out was an evil entity, not just this random name he chose for himself, he'd actually been possessed, because that's withdrawn from him, suddenly he's not only powerless, but he doesn't have that possession anymore, I guess you could say. So he's a normal guy who suddenly realizes that he's done really terrible, terrible things, and suddenly he gets all his power back. And so he seems to be more in control of who he is once he gets his powers back. He's not as crazy as he was before, but, you know, suddenly you get your power back and you want revenge, you're not exactly going to be the nicest guy around dealing with everybody else. So I'm glad to see that version of Hal Jordan back, because I liked that version of Hal Jordan with the frosted hair looking like Perry White from the Daily Planet. That's, you know, the version I grew up with. So I'm happy to see him back just because of that. But as far as the story goes, it's, again, random people fighting because this guy's telling them that they got to fight. So you just have to see how it plays out, if it does anything that's actually interesting. And that's the problem with a lot of these first books. It's like you're getting the setup and you don't really know how it's going to pan out in the long run, if it's, you know, going to be worth your time. You have to read it to find out if you're going to.
Yeah, that's why I'm like scared to even attempt them, because like, I feel like after the end, I'll be like, oh, just wasting my time.
Now, Green Arrow is a little different, just because he was a guy that, you know, obviously didn't have powers to begin with. So he was never depowered. So this whole time, he's still been working as a vigilante, helping people out. But
he's the hood.
They go the most basic, cliched route, where it's a bunch of skinheads, white supremacists, who suddenly appear out of nowhere, that decide that they're tired of living in this dome with all these other races, so they're going to attack him and beat him up, and he's got to protect the people. And, you know, it's kind of your most basic Green Arrow type story from that era. Nothing really special about the particular book. And then when we get to the end, though, when they're going to have to fight, they actually come up against other world versions of themselves. Or not themselves, but of Oliver's family. So Dinah, his daughter from some other alternate universe are there. And those are the ones he's going to have to fight. So at least it sets up something interesting for what's going to happen in the next issue. Let's see, what do we got? We got Man of Steel. This one was not good.
Okay. No need to talk about it. No need to dwell on it.
If you read the 52 miniseries several years ago, it's kind of following along those lines. The main thing, though, is that Parasite is one of the guys involved in the storyline, and when everybody gets their powers back, Parasite, of course, is able to start stealing everybody's powers, and Gen 13 shows up to fight Steel. And
really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Gen 13, Sidon.
But here's the thing. Parasite just starts stealing all the powers of Gen 13. So he just starts sucking the life out of all of Gen 13, and he's getting all of their powers. So now they're going to have to fight Parasite instead of fighting Gen 13.
Okay.
But it just shows you that Gen 13 sucks. I mean, that's really the point of the whole.
That's funny.
Let's see. We got Supergirl Matrix, and this one ties back.
Neo shows up, what?
I'm sorry, what? No.
Neo shows up, what? I didn't understand why they called the Supergirl Matrix. Please.
Okay. Explain. Yes. In the John Byrne reboot of Superman, the Matrix was actually the birthing Matrix that brought Kal-El to Earth. In Krypton, in that storyline, it was so antiseptic that babies weren't made the old-fashioned way. They were basically, a little bit was taken from the mom, a little bit taken from the dad. They went to this factory, and babies were gestated in these pods, and then the baby would be brought to you after it came out of the birthing matrix. And so he actually took the birthing matrix that had their baby that was growing in it and shot that to Earth, and so Superman was actually born on Earth. And so it kind of changed the story a little bit. That matrix kept some of his genetic code within, and so after Superman died, the robots in the Fortress of Solitude took that birthing matrix and tried to reconstruct Superman.
Okay.
And what they ended up making was this, like, shapeshifter blob that became Superman for a while, but then eventually had this, like, mental breakdown, somehow got the memories of Laura Kent and decided that she was going to be Supergirl, and so this shapeshifter thing became Supergirl instead of this doppelganger Superman. And so this Matrix, as it's known, is what was Supergirl for a long time in the DC Universe.
Mm.
This book, okay, I've told you that entire story, and you're probably sitting there going, what the hell? I don't understand anything about this book, even though it's just been explained to you. That is the theme that this book takes. This book is from Keith Giffen, so this is a straight-up comedy book.
Mm-hmm.
This is full of one-liners. This is full of Lex Luthor just making fun of her for how stupid she is because she doesn't know all the, Earth customs and whatever. We've got Lady Quark, who appeared in the other comic, and she's fighting with the king of their planet. The two of them are bickering back and forth and fighting each other just as much. And at the end, we get the return of Ambush Bug.
Oh, God.
Who has appeared out of the cosmos to help in this battle. And so it looks like basically she's going to use him, sacrifice him, just throw him at the bad guys until they're destroyed. But, I mean, it's played as a straight comedy book. If you don't know anything about the book, it actually tries to explain it with a lot of the little editorial notes in there.
Okay.
It's fun of itself. It doesn't take itself too seriously. So I think in that regard, it actually kind of works because it is kind of complex and a little silly overall.
All right.
We got the Justice League International, which, again, spends most of the book doing setup.
But Guy doesn't get knocked out, so.
Yeah, well, there's no Guy Gardner in this one.
Aww.
But you do get this alternate version of the DC heroes that appear at the end that includes a Wonder Woman, a Shazam, Jade, Huntress, Blue Beetle, Creeper, all of these guys from this alternate Justice League that are going to attack, but it's one of those things where, the whole book is set up, and at the very end is where it's finally like, okay, let's go into battle, and then that's the end of the issue. So not a lot actually happening in that one. And then Suicide Squad.
All right.
All right, since you read this one, I'll let you kick it off.
All right, now I got to pull it up because I kind of fall into the lull of like, oh, with the convergence. So let me pull this up, trying to remember what the heck happens in this thing.
The one thing I will say about this particular issue is the artwork is from Tom Mandrake, who has a very dark style. He actually does a lot of horror comics.
Hmm.
He actually did the X-Files 30 Days of Night crossover from last year. Or was it 2 years ago? I don't remember. But anyway, so his dark style actually works, I think, in a certain way with Suicide Squad, giving it that darker edge.
Right. There was one page, which was a splash page, I had real problems with, and I'm glad that you mentioned the art, because I was going to save that to last. But, because for the most part during the book, it didn't distract at all, and it, in fact, enhanced the story, like you said.
He's much more about tone
mm-hmm.
Than detail on a lot of stuff.
Right.
A lot of times you will get just kind of like someone's face with some scribbles on it because they're in shadow,
Right.
It's not given the same attention that maybe another artist would put on it, but his style is very dark and very moody, so that atmosphere that he brings to it adds something different
mm-hmm.
than other artists would.
Right. Okay. So this book starts, it starts with, you're in the middle of a particular scene. I don't want to spoil anything, but the very next scene pretty much jumps into the heart of the book, which involves some of the, I guess, unpowered rogues gallery that we've come to know from Suicide Squad / The Flash. And we deal with these characters, you know, in the midst of the dome having been up for just about a year at this point, and they're going back and forth about the effects that the dome has had on their, you know, crime careers, because they still have their tech and they still have their skills. But about 10 pages in, as Dirt was describing earlier, the dome drops, people get their powers back, and things change. And General Lane, Lois Lane's father, decides to put together a squad to kind of take the fight to their opponents, as appointed by Telos, or Telos. And it turns out that their opponents are the Kingdom Come version of the heroes, the older Mark Waid, Alex Ross reality. And it's interesting to see them, you know, form the, you know, to see them take form in this book. And basically the Suicide Squad is put together with, it's really a pretty stellar squad. You know, other than the regular Suicide Squatters, they have a pretty good kind of like an all-star team put together. They've got Bane and Deathstroke on the same team.
Right.
You know, throwing Black Manta and then the rest of the Suicide Squatters. And I'm like, wow, that's actually a pretty formidable lineup. And throwing, I mean, you know, I should have hit the spoiler alert before, but come on, it's Convergence. Are you really reading it? they even throw in Cyborg Superman's boot.
Well, he's on the cover.
Oh, is he? Yeah. I'd probably flip right past that.
So, but I mean, if you're going up against the Kingdom Come universe, I mean, that is a universe of heavy hitters.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that you are looking at Superman, Wonder Woman, you know, Green Lantern, and everybody. And the Suicide Squad is being put together technically not to take on the Kingdom Come universe as a whole, but just to go after Green Lantern. Their whole job is just basically to take out the Alan Scott Green Lantern of the Kingdom Come universe. And,
well, at least tactically, right. That's their tactic. That's their strategy.
Right, right. They're going to take him out, which takes away a lot of their power. And the funny thing is that, of course, it's, you know, it's Suicide Squad, so it's Amanda Waller. She's always doing these, you know, backdoor shady deals and whatever. And she's actually working with Oracle trying to flip someone from the Kingdom Come universe, which I won't spoil.
Right.
But they're trying to flip him from being on their side to being on the Suicide Squad's side, basically to help them take control with, I'm assuming the idea would be he would come over to their city and he would survive after everyone else gets wiped out, you know, at the end of Convergence.
And really, without spoiling it, I'm not, you know, without spoiling who's on this last page reveal, I was not a fan of the artwork that Mandrake had on this last page, and it really turned me off to, I hate to say this, it didn't necessarily turn me off to the whole book or the rest of the book, but I had a bad taste when I saw that, and that's just me. That's just me being particular.
Yeah. I mean, his style, his style's not for everybody. It's not your classic comic book style. It is different.
And it's not even clean. You know, that's maybe
that's like I said, he does a lot of horror comics.
Right.
And so you take a guy who traditionally is doing a lot of disemboweling and ghosts and swamp creatures, and then you have him drawing Deathstroke and Bane in a prison cell. It doesn't always translate, you know.
Right.
But, I mean, overall, as far as the story goes, I actually enjoyed that story more than some of the others.
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty well-told story. Listen, of the two Convergence books that I read this week, I'm glad I picked Convergence number 2 and Suicide Squad, because they actually read fairly well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of the ones that I skimmed, I'm very glad I skimmed them, because I could definitely tell that I was not going to enjoy sitting down and reading
them. I would say go read the Supergirl Matrix one just because of the comedy in it.
Okay.
Even if you don't know anything about who these people are, I mean, you get that little cheat in the back of the book. You can read first if you want
to. And there's no Trinity, there's no Neo, there's no...
And Frank Thierry saw us tweeting about it and followed everyone.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
He did.
That was pretty cool.
Frank Thierry.
Shout out to Wang.
My new good friend, Frank Thierry. Yeah.
Shout out to Matt Wang.
Yeah, but he's the one that was telling us how good it was.
Now, I did not read Superboy, because I can't stand that version of Superboy, but I'll probably flip through it.
Is that the original? Oh,
okay.
It's from the Death and Return of Superman version of Superboy.
It's not the T-shirt one, I guess. The leather jacket one with the awful haircut, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't read Aquaman I tried to. I actually tried to start it, but the artwork on it, I just couldn't. It's got this weird kind of airbrushy style to it that I just couldn't get into. And then Catwoman, I just ran out of time. I probably would have read it if I had an opportunity. I just didn't get to it.
All right.
Good convergence.
Yeah, that's a great recap.
That's your DC for the week. That's pretty much everything.
Don't say we don't talk about DC on this show.
That's right. Yeah, what we don't talk about is Dynamite, but that's another story.
All right, so who's got a Marvel?
All right, let's pull up some Marvel.
Well, y'all were discussing that. I did check out the Batman vs. Superman trailer.
Oh, okay.
Can't wait to see too much.
All right.
Well, how about Deathlok?
Deathlok
is one of my contenders for Click of the Week.
Really?
And, I mean, it's
I did read this. It's not on my list, but I did read it, so I can contribute. Go ahead.
I just... Nathan Edmondson is so great at constructing these stories and building these characters up and tearing them down and putting them in these awful situations and then having them be smart enough to figure their way out. And what we've got with Deathlok is, in a previous issue, he woke up. So for a long time, he had been used secretly as an assassin that he himself didn't even know he was. His memories would be wiped, he'd be implanted with fake memories and sent back to his regular life, and every so often, they would call him into service and he would go kill, maim, destroy, retrieve, and then go back to his normal life. So now that he's woken up, Control is calling down on him, saying, hey, we need you to come do this, and he's having second thoughts. He's having a moral dilemma, whether or not he should be involved in all the stuff that they're forcing him to do. And, of course, the lady who's controlling him for this, you know, secret corporation that, you know, we never figure out exactly who they are, she's desperately trying to get him to go along with the program because she knows that if he doesn't, he'll be killed, and she kind of likes the guy. She kind of feels bad for the way he's being manipulated. She's not apparently one of these evil people. She's just kind of caught up in everything the same as everyone else is. And this is the issue where they figure out that she has lost control. And so now the hammer's coming down on her. The hammer's coming down on Deathlok. Deathlok knows his daughter. They know who she is and that they've been tracking her, so they know that she's in danger. S.H.I.E.L.D. has figured out that there is this other secret corporation out there that's doing all these terrible things and hacking into places where they shouldn't be able to, and they're trying to they're realizing that they've been compromised, their security has been compromised, and so it's like everybody, this is the Empire Strikes Back type of issue where everybody's being put in like the worst possible spot of trying to figure out where to go from here because it doesn't look like anybody is as well off as they thought they were.
Sure, sure. You know what I really liked about this issue, and I really did need, you know, a little bit of a refresher because I had missed a few issues here and there. I did not realize that this version of Deathlok had awoken in that sense. So that took me a little bit of recapping, you know, reading that first page recap to understand.
Yeah.
But what I really enjoy about this series is that Mike Perkins, the artist, you know, who I always understood to be kind of in a shadow, or I don't want to say ape, but he definitely shadowed Steve Epting's style of art on Captain America.
And to see him
bring that and really develop it and enhance it for this book, you know, it brings a lot to it.
It is beautiful.
It brings a lot to the story.
Really well done book.
I think that the cool twist in here that they're bringing in another version of Deathlok and revealing it finally is interesting. Yeah.
So they're sending another assassin after him, another person from within the program.
Right.
Because, you know, if you can't control him, you got to take him out.
So there is another Deathlok going after Deathlok?
Well,
there's two. I was about to say, there's actually two versions of that story in this book.
It's like Deathlok is not. Deathlok is the name of this guy, but there's another assassin
guy.
Exactly. He's got like a French name
right,
or something. So he's definitely, you know, completely different type of person who's brought in. And his technology looks a little different. You know, so it's not like you just have all these clones of like the same robot assassin guy going around. Like
yeah, Seraph.
Right, yeah. Each one has its own personality, its own distinctive look,
right,
its own handler, you know, its own controller within the corporation. Right. So
I was actually referring to another version of Deathlok, like literally another version.
Oh, they find the older man.
Exactly.
They find an older guy who is like a prototype or an earlier version of the Deathlok killer.
Right. So, you know, that's all in play. And for someone who hasn't read Deathlok in maybe a few months, this wasn't a bad issue to jump back on, even though it definitely is as Dirt said, an Empire Strikes Back type of issue where everyone's kind of put into peril, you know, into a different place where they have to kind of work their way out of. It's, you know, it was a pretty fun and interesting read, but to me the highlight was the art really, you know, really boosting the story.
Yeah, so this is a contender for Click of the Week.
Excellent. Glad to hear it. All right, let's see. How about, what did Tim read?
What did I read? I read a couple things this week.
Two whole things?
No, he's got a great list.
A couple is more than two. Two is few. Couple is couple.
Well, a couple. No, if you're a couple, you're...
Let me get to a number one issue this week. Bloodshot Reborn number one.
Okay.
From the recently discussed earlier Jeff Lemire.
Where is that?
Okay, Valiant Comics. So this takes place after the events of The Valiant, which was the four-issue limited series that kind of kickstarts this whole Valiant Next initiative that Valiant's got going on right now.
Valiant Now! No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, that's basically what it is. Spoilers.
Uh-oh, hold on.
So The Valiant ended with... So the premise of The Valiant was there's the immortal enemy every couple decades or whatever, or 100 years, comes back and kills the current Geomancer that, who's their immortal, the immortal dude from Valiant, I can't think of his name.
No, the Eternal Warrior.
Eternal Warrior is supposed to protect. And basically he keeps failing, and every time the Geomancer is killed, it sends the Earth into like 100 years of all this evil stuff. Mm-hmm. Surprised no one's mentioned that before.
Okay.
You know, haven't occurred. But anyway, so all these Valiant heroes are recruited to try to help their Eternal Warrior protect the Geomancer, who is this woman named Kay McHenry. She just recently became Geomancer. She has no idea what's going on, so she's like the noob. But at one point in the series, Bloodshot takes her and tries to hide her out, and they do some bonding, and, you know, it's like the woman and the savage animal, she sees some kind of, like, you know, humanity in him, blah, blah, blah. But it ends with the immortal enemy kills her. So I guess that's going to send Earth into, you know, all this bad stuff. But before she's killed, she is able to pull the nanites out of Bloodshot, and it makes him human again. So this is where it picks up. It's like it's 6 months after the Valiant. He's made sure to stay off the grid, so the Project Rising Spirit can't find him. He's in Colorado, I think, or Arizona, I forget which state he's in, but he's working as like a utility man at a Motel 6 or whatever, doing odd jobs, and he's starting to like hallucinate, because that also helping on art. The artist is Miko
Suayan?
Yes, thank you. He's the main artist, but also Jeff Lemire does some art in this as well.
No kidding.
So since we ran a spoiler bell earlier, I can go ahead and say that basically, he adds some pencils where Bloodshot, it seems like Bloodshot's hallucinating and seeing like a mini Bloodshot, like an animated caricature of himself called Bloodsport.
No. Oh, no.
He like sees him in the TV and
go all Deadpool on us, Bloodshot.
One of the patrons of the hotel has a grandson that plays this like violent video game, and like he walks by the video game and he sees like Bloodsport in it, like speaking to him, and then Bloodsport shows up in his motel room, you know, talking to him, and then Kay McHenry shows up also talking to him. So basically he's like hallucinating, and then he sees on the news how there's a person that looks very similar to him committing all these crimes across America. You know, guy's got like the circle on his chest and kind of has like paley white skin. So he's like, you know, what's going on, yada, yada, yada. So basically, he decides I need to go, and, you know, it's time to go see what's up, and that's where the issue ends. So, yes, we have Blood Squirt as, I guess, the Blood Squirt character will keep appearing, penciled by Jeff Lemire. But I like this, like a grim, gritty type of comic, because there's a lot of recapping and getting new readers familiar with who the Bloodshot character is, you know, guy that kills a bunch of people, he has a healing factor, memories erased. Basically, the best qualities of Wolverine and
Deadpool.
Yeah, Deadpool and
there's definitely a little Deadpool there with little blood squirt.
Yep. So, I enjoyed it.
All right, cool. Let's see, what can I put out there? Tim, what'd you think of Uncanny X-Men number 33? I see you read that also.
Yeah,
I liked it. I liked it. I enjoyed it because it was a cool little, you know, interlude issue between Shadowcat or Kitty Pryde and Ileana Rasputin Magic.
Yeah, but it's not the Scott Summers story.
Like I said, it's an interlude because
that's that's the only reason I read it for the last 2 months was because it was Scott Summers realizing what a big D-bag he's been. And
I've got a couple issues with this and, I guess, last issue and whatever Uncanny 600, which comes next month. Mm-hmm. It's the whole, you know, Secret Wars is coming up, and this is Brian Bendis' last X-Men stories. Let's try to quickly wrap everything up.
Right. Or try to put, you know what it is, what I sense this to be? I sense this to be kind of, let's put a few things back into play or put things back into the box like we found them. You know, kind of reestablishing some of these relationships that might have become estranged, you know, given how they've developed, you know, across the two, across the schism.
If I was reading his Avengers and New Avengers, this is probably how the ending of those books felt.
Yeah.
So he probably had more time to wrap everything up nicely.
Probably. But you know what? My favorite part of this book was the little kid.
Yeah, the kid was fine.
Right?
The story itself.
You know, the little kid's dialogue made me laugh, you know. I give Bendis some credit on that one.
Did I write notes for this? Yeah, it seems odd the series wraps up next issue with so many things unresolved. Cyclops Revolution ending abruptly. Isn't Havoc still inverted? What happens to the recruited new mutants?
Right, and then we jump to this.
Right. Yeah.
I get the feeling they're going to handle a lot of that in the extra-sized final issue.
No, they won't. It'd have to be like 60 pages to answer.
So well, given how Bendis writes in that decompressed format, it'll take 100 pages. But, you know, I think they're going to resolve a lot of that stuff. I think that the resolution is going to be a lot less dramatic than you think it's going to be. You know, and I think that, like I said, that, you know, Bendis is going to put a lot of these toys back in the box for the next person to play with.
Yeah, but that's not something to say. Yeah, like it had to be 60-ish, you know, 60 pages to wrap everything up in a somewhat decent fashion. And yeah.
All right. Okay, so let me throw out something here that I read that maybe you guys didn't read. Ms. Marvel number 14?
That is a safe assumption to make.
Why aren't you reading this, Dirt? This is really good.
Which one?
Ms. Marvel number 14.
I'm behind on Ms. Marvel. I need to get caught up.
Right, so very quickly without spoiling too much. So in the last issue, we find Ms. Marvel has met a boy. But not just any boy. It's actually a young man who is of a similar background, similar ethnic descent, and of a similar ethnic background, and you know her parents are looking to possibly set her up. And it turns out he's actually, you know, they actually have some chemistry with each other. But there is a reveal at the end of the last issue that's followed up on in this issue. Irony of ironies, stroke of luck. This young man, is also a new human. I rang the spoiler bell a while ago, and I apologize for not ringing it again. But he's also a new human, and this leads us down a kind of a cool path where not only is she breaking a lot, breaking a lot of the taboos and committing a lot of the things that a young Muslim woman really isn't, you know, they're really not supposed to do with a man, or at least a male. You know, we're also throwing in the fact that, you know, she's still learning about being an Inhuman and kind of integrating herself into the greater Marvel Universe. And what we have here at the end of this issue is an integration of her as a new human into the greater Inhuman landscape, but not with Attilan. She's already had her experience with Attilan, and, you know, Medusa has kind of let her be on her own. But now we've got another faction of Inhumans that she's encountering. So it's a cool way of integrating Ms. Marvel into the greater Inhuman world, or you know, sub-universe that Marvel's creating by constantly, you know, having her interact, you know, or at least every few issues interact with the other Inhumans and new humans that are running around. Overall, this issue was, I like this issue. It was a fun read. There was a lot of character development in it. And the art was pretty good. The artist is, I want to say Miyazawa, but forgive me for possibly forgetting that, because it's definitely not Alfona. It's the other, you know, there's a rotating artist team on this, and
so that's the name on the cover.
Is it Miyazawa?
Yeah,
Takeshi Miyazawa. So, as I said, the art is nice and consistent.
That's the artist that's doing the Greg Pak Kickstarter, I think, right?
I'm not 100% sure. I didn't look at the details of that.
I have to check that. Hold on.
But the bottom line is, if you're not reading this book, I think you should be. I've said it before on the show. This is a book that I hand to people and tell them, look, if you're not reading anything, if you're not reading a comic, or if you're a lapsed reader, I hand it to them. I recently acquired a copy of the second trade paperback, and you know, I'm more than willing to lend this out to people because I firmly believe in this character and I love the story that G. Willow Wilson is telling.
Not 100% sure if that's the same artist or not. Actually, it looks a lot like it, so I'm going to say this.
All right. Okay. Tim, I see you read Nova number 29. Let's talk about that. I read that, too.
That was the last book I finished before we start recording. So his tie-in with the Black Vortex is over. So
right, and something happens in this book that I don't think we've seen happen yet in the Black Vortex, right? Where he acquires a certain artifact.
Oh, I didn't pick up on that.
Well,
the helmet.
Right. I didn't want to spoil everything, Tim. Gee, you know. But he picks up a certain artifact and he has to do something with it. And I never realized that he'd actually acquired it. And I'm like, when does this happen? Are you forcing me to read the damn end of Black Vortex?
Yeah, I like how the next issue of All New X-Men number 40, which introduces the Utopians, which Brian Bendis has been teasing for freaking ever, and now it's going to be like a throwaway right before he leaves the series.
Yeah.
But that mini rant over on that front, but a couple page preview for it, I was flipping through on comic book resources, and oh, there's a nice spoiler for at least what happens to one character at the end of the Black Vortex.
Unreal. Like, anyway, okay. Back to Nova.
With all pages, you could have kept that page out of the freaking preview that you sent out to people.
Hmm.
I can see, like, solicit trying not to spoil something, because you can kind of dance around it in words.
Tim's still going. Like, he's fired up.
These are the pages they they send out to the press to promote, and you're ruining something that hasn't happened yet, even though it's next week, and technically we could go ahead and read it now if you want to.
Well, we could. Then keep away from spoilers. Stay off the internet.
I guess so. That's basically how the internet's become now.
Look, go to Facebook, see what your mom is up to, and then otherwise stay off the internet. Don't talk to anybody. Don't read anything. Don't get any emails, because people are gonna start direct messaging you on Twitter and sending you emails with spoilers of everything.
Hmm.
Get me on some press lists. Okay, so back to the actual story, I guess, for Nova. So yeah, you said he comes back with the artifact.
Right. So we take care of that, and that immediately.
That actually.
What were you gonna say?
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I was gonna say that actually explains a lot of what I didn't understand at the beginning part of this issue, because I was just like, "Oh, this is kind of odd." Okay.
I get what's happening, and I'm like, "What is happening? Why are we doing this stupid Black Vortex?" And you know, once I got past that, I thought the rest of the story was actually pretty good.
I was gonna say a lot of it. Is sometimes I don't remember what happened in the previous issue or something, so I just thought it was something I missed in the last issue.
Right, I don't think it was the last issue because of the Black Vortex crossover. Yeah. I think we're going back a few issues at least. But I thought that this kind of got us back up to speed with what is actually going on in you know, with the Nova character, and we got back up to speed pretty quickly. And you know, let me tell you, the storytelling in this was actually pretty good. I like that, you know, there's a couple of great little gags, sight gags and written gags here and there to kind of keep the tone light. But at the same time, you know, there's still a lot of development of the story. There is the ongoing search for Sam Alexander's father. That's developed in this. And we also have, you know, we're definitely getting a lot of the growing pain of the young Nova.
There's a lot of that going on.
Yeah, there's a lot of it.
We get some cameos from
all over the place.
Bill and other folks.
Yeah, Guardians, members of the Guardians of the Galaxy, other alien races. So, you know, I actually enjoyed this issue for what it was after we got past that little interlude or prelude with the artifact. So, you know, I was surprised. You know, I was definitely surprised at how much I enjoyed reading this once I got past that. You know, I'm actually looking forward to seeing what happens in the next issue.
Does it feel like they presented this issue as people who are going to be new to Nova because of Black Vortex to kind of put them on an even flooring as the issue went?
Not so much because they open with that artifact. And because like of that, I think it's hard to... I would be hard-pressed to hand this to someone and say, this is your first comic in ever? Here.
Well, no, I mean, if you were reading other Marvel stuff and you read Black Vortex because of the crossover, you weren't necessarily familiar with Nova.
If you're an X-Men fan, basically, who picked up the crossover.
Right. So then would this service those readers?
To get you up to speed? I would think so.
Okay.
Get you back on track. Get the story back on track. And that's really what it serves to do.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Let's see. How about we talk about something I like this week?
Sports?
Sports? What? Let's go Rangers. What?
Well, something you like this week, I figure.
Yeah, sports. Let's go Rangers. The Rangers are up 1-0 in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and the New York Mets won tonight, too. They're in first place.
I'm already asleep.
All right. Let's get to something that I thoroughly enjoyed, is thoroughly a candidate for Click of the Week. Spider-Man and the X-Men number 5. I cannot say this enough. This is one of the most enjoyable reads that I have every month when it comes out. You guys are missing out if you're not reading it, I swear.
Why is he wearing the black suit?
I'll get to that without spoiling too much.
All right.
Well, I mean, I have to spoil that part since you're asking about the black suit. The black suit is not cloth. Let's put it that way. But the cover gives away a portion of what's going on in here. There are symbiotes abounding, you know? There are symbiotes running around in this issue together with Brood and what is her face? Oh, what's her face? Deathbird is running around in this too. It's all sorts of mayhem involving X-Men and Spider-Man, space-based villains kind of mingling, and it's really pretty fun. Let me tell you, the interaction that we all sort of question between Spider-Man and the X-Men, you know, why would he be there? How would they get along? It's that, you know, it's the dichotomy, the two kind of, they're not polar opposites, obviously, but they're definitely two sides, two vastly different points of view. And having them bounce off each other throughout the series has been a real treat. You know, I give Elliot Kalan a lot of credit. Marco Faia is great on the pencils. And, you know, it's just a consistent, enjoyable read every week. We do find out who the mole is, Moly Moly Mole, and it's not who you think it is because it's not, spoiler alert, it's not Glob Herman, and it's a great running gag over the last couple of issues, like who the mole, you know, wondering who the mole is, and we do find out at the end of the issue, there is a big reveal at the end of the issue, so obviously I won't spoil that, but, you know, before we get to the end of the issue, we have a lot of just great interactions between the characters, between Spidey and the X-Men, between these newer X-Men characters, these misfits that, you know, they just, you know, they've really taken to their new professor. And there's just a lot of really cool scenes in this book. I can't say, you know, I can't emphasize enough how much of an enjoyable read it is. If you're looking for something fun to read, Dirt, Tim, pick it up. It's you know, you won't regret it. It's really fun.
I almost picked up the previous issue before this one last night before I went to bed, but I realized I was too tired, so I won't be able to finish it. But I'm gonna flip through it just on your recommendation, because I remember the last issue you enjoyed also.
It's fun.
Probably doesn't want to read it because I know it's not going to matter.
But it's. But you know what's funny? I'll tell you something. Why do you think it's not going to matter? Because in my opinion, I think that this is going to lead into, or at least be referenced by, you know, future, you know, headmasters or headmistresses of the Xavier School or the Jean Grey School. You know, this obviously kind of reestablishes a relationship between Spidey and the X-Men family. So, you know, why do you think it's not going to matter?
For one, even if Secret Wars wasn't about to come up, I don't think the sales on this are doing that well. So I think it would be canceled somewhere before issue 12 or issue 12 anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And two, Secret Wars is coming up and it's going to end probably because of Secret Wars anyway. And since I'm already not really invested in it anyway, I'm just like, why try to? I like the art seems fine. It seems like a nice, you know, fun, non-continuity heavy story. so I should like it.
Right. I love it for pretty much those reasons, that they're just fun. But I love the character work in this. You know, they really, you know, as much as we none of us are really the biggest fans of, do you remember Wolverine and the X-Men? You know, that was a prime candidate to get cut on my physical pull list. But I continued reading it because it developed, or continued to develop, the students that they had introduced for, you know, for the Jean Grey school and from New X-Men. And I liked seeing how these characters were being developed. And this book in particular really does develop a lot of their personalities. And, you know, it's just a lot of fun to read. You know, I can't really, you know, I can't really explain how this is going to, you know, kind of matter. I guess that's what you want it to do. You want it to matter going forward. I can't really say it will, but it's a great read, you know, in the interim.
In March, Spider-Man and the X-Men sold less than Squirrel Girl and Wolverines.
You say that's all just a crossover, a mix-up?
Wah, 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 wah. So, that's pretty sad.
Yeah,
I didn't hear the sad trombone. Did you guys hear it?
Yeah, we heard it.
Okay, good, because I hit it a couple times. I didn't hear it.
I'm going to get to Thor number 7.
Yes, this was a good issue.
Yes, it's
this
up there for
very, very good.
We don't find out who's under the helmet yet.
That's we're almost there.
We get some clues, though.
We get some strong clues.
Yes. The art is great, again, Russell Darterman. So basically this is the female Thor taking on the Destroyer, and Odinson and Freya show up at the end with some backup.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically the issue.
Yeah, that's basically the issue. They definitely set up who the prime candidate for the new Thor's alter ego is. There was a couple of weird, you know, and obviously Jason Aaron is playing a little bit with what we understand to be how Mjolnir works, you know, in terms of who can pick it up and whatnot. And spoiler alert, the Destroyer picks it up. And it's very interesting because the Destroyer picks up the hammer, and then you think about who's actually animating the Destroyer hammer. I mean, the Destroyer armor, in order to pick up the hammer. And you wonder how, you know, they're kind of playing fast and loose with the whole worthy thing.
Well, they explained it away in the issue, though. It's a weapon wielding a weapon.
Right, and that's just weird because I go back to when, you know, obviously I'm not spoiling anything by talking about books that are like 30. Almost 30 years old now, but going back to the Simonson run when Thor himself was animating the Destroyer armor and he was able to pick up Mjolnir because he was the one animating the armor. So, you know, it's kind of weird that, you know, that we just sort of, you know, have that throwaway line like, oh yeah, this is how it's happening. But no, it's just tough for me to swallow in that regard. But all that said, there's a continuing expansion of what Mjolnir actually is and how Mjolnir may actually, you know, act and behave, you know, possibly giving it sentience, so, or at least a form of it, or a form of awareness, and that's played with a little bit in this. You know, we have this little side trip with Dario Agger, the Minotaur, and what's this dude's name? Malekith. Trying to, you know, and their plot is still afoot, while the Chick Thor and the Destroyer are duking it out. And, you know, and like you said, Tim, we get to a final panel where we find out what's going to, you know, we basically see there's going to be a big throwdown in the next issue when we find out finally, probably, who the new Thor is.
And then the solicits for next issue said, you know, we find out, you know, the identity, but also, like, the last page will, like, shocked everyone.
Who could it be that's so shocking?
Well, I'm wondering, is it just the revelation that's going to be shocking, or is it, like, something else entirely that's the shocking thing? Like, something totally not related to the identity of Thor.
Yeah. I would lean towards the latter, not the former. Yeah, I would lean towards the latter, not the former.
And Chrononauts number 2, more time-traveling fun with the romance between the
Bo and Luke Duke as they travel through time.
Yeah,
oh no!
Basically, I was gonna say I don't know their names off the top of my head, but the scientist and his best friend. But yeah, basically Bo and Luke Duke.
Oh no!
As they break every single rule of time travel known to man.
They're just the good old boys. Daredevil. Oh, goodness.
Nice little fun issue.
All right. Are we in rapid review time?
Actually, I have one that's a potential click of the week for me.
Go for it.
And that is Millennium number 4. This series has really come around from its terrible start. The first issue really made me unhappy, but it has turned things around and is shooting in the right direction. For people who are unfamiliar with the series, just to give like a quick kind of recap, is that the Millennium Group was this group of former FBI agents, former CIA agents, guys who were in law enforcement, and were coming together and working for this group to fight some sort of lawlessness, that they would consult on murder cases, serial killers, things like that, things that were kind of beyond your normal type of case. And what you found was that the Millennium Group was kind of split into two groups, and you had a group that thought the end of the world was coming with the new millennium, but then there was another splinter group that thought the end of the world was going to be coming 40 years down the line. And they were fighting for control of the group, and one group had more of a kind of faith-based look on the end of the world coming, because they thought the end of the world was going to be in that Judeo-Christian Book of Revelation type of end of the world, whereas the other group thought that they had found evidence of some sort of cosmic event way out in space that was causing this ripple through the universe that was going to wipe out all life on Earth down the line. And so as the character here on the cover, Frank Black, as he was doing his investigations, he found out that the group was actually manipulating events, trying to cause certain things to happen or keep certain things from happening. And within the group, there seemed to be those who wanted the end of the world to come, as well as those who were fighting against the end of the world. And so the manipulations, the backstabbing, the people trying to use this as a way to control the world, he became disheartened. He started to rebel against the group, and the final season of the show was him working against the group, trying to stop them from all the things that they were trying to do. One of the other key things about the character is that he had this unique ability to look at a crime scene, to look at a murder, and to shift his mind to the mindset of the killer. So when he walked in and he saw a body, he saw blood, he saw, you know, the signs of the struggle, in his mind he would become the killer and relive whatever psychosis the person had that led them to be this type of killer. And over the course of the years, he began to see this real theme of evil, that evil was actually something that existed, that had some sort of mindset behind it, that was a real elemental force. People don't just go nuts, you know, one day, that their brain just stops working, that there's actually something about the very essence of evil that is alive and real and exists. And whether you see that as demons or, you know, whatever, there is something there. And it was the counterpoint of the X-Files. You know, the X-Files was all about aliens and that kind of government conspiracy, and this is really about evil and power and control and that type of conspiracy. And what this issue does is it brings things back full circle, where he finally meets up with his daughter. In the TV show, his daughter was, I don't know, 7, 8 years old. She was very young. She was starting to develop abilities similar to his, where she was having visions of things. She was seeing evil things, prophetic type of things. And he didn't know how to stop it, how to control it. Well, you know, over the years, they've become estranged. And in this issue, they come back together, and she has joined with the Millennium Group. So this group that he turned against because of the way that they were manipulating and trying to gain power, she has actually joined. And she has joined in the idea that she thinks she can help control it from the inside, whereas he felt he had to cut himself off from it in order to keep it from corrupting him. So you're getting this good versus evil, you know, fight, that struggle that's always been within Frank, but now it's he and his daughter are struggling against this group in that same good versus evil. She wants to fix it from the inside. He knows you have to be, you know, cut clean from it in order to fight it from the outside. And at the same time, this essence of evil, this whatever evil force that he felt in the world is coming back, and this evil is rising, and it's starting to re-manifest itself in the real world. And whatever it is, it, you know, a lot of times he has a Catholic background, so he kind of comes at it from that way every once in a while, but there are also other times where he's not quite sure if that's what's really happening or if that's the way he sees it just because of his upbringing. And there are times he runs into people from the Far East who see things, you know, kind of along the same way of good versus evil, but in a very different connotation because of their philosophies and their religions and their worldviews. And so here he sees that this evil is rising, but he's not sure where exactly it's coming from. Is it the group being manipulative, or is it something outside of the group that's starting to rise up again in the world? You know, he's just not sure of where this evil is. And as a fan of the TV show, as someone who really loved this TV show when it was on, this, the last issue and this issue really grabbed the essence of that show. This right now is only a 5-issue miniseries. So, you know, it's going to end with the next issue. But it started so horribly in the first issue, and where we're at now with the fourth issue, I'm literally dying to read the last issue.
Nice.
Like, it's come around 180 degrees. It's just so fantastic the way that they've done it. And so I was
really, so you've forgiven them for that horrible
issue. I was really harsh at the beginning because I was so upset with the way they had done it. But now that they've brought it back around, and again, you know, I said when the first one came out, I understand it's, you got to tie it into X-Files to try to sell it to those people, you know, because that's a market of people who are buying comic books. So you just want to, you know, sell it to that same group of people. But they've brought it back around to a point where I really enjoy it. And so this was another candidate for Click of the Week for me because I just really am blown away. And the artwork in this is fantastic. Loremire, see if I can find the full name here. Colin Loremire has a very dark style, very similar in essence to what we were talking about Tom Mandrake earlier, except it's a much cleaner style. It's almost that guy, I can't think of his name, but... Francavilla, is that his name? Guy who's been doing like all the Archie horror covers.
Francisco Francavilla.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. It's more in line with his, a little more angular, but more in line with his style of artwork.
Okay.
And so it's very, like the likenesses work. Like when you're looking at it, you look at the character of Frank Black, and it looks like Lance Henriksen. Like, you believe that it's actually that actor. It's a dead-on, you know, he does a really good job with the likenesses. And it's a much cleaner style than the Mandrake one, but it works really well to add that tone. It has that style to it. So the artwork's good. The story's good. They brought me back around. They won me back over. So serious contender for Click of the Week.
Awesome.
All right, and those are my books for the week. So if you got rapid fires on anything, go for it.
Yeah, I got a couple. Let me take care of mine. Captain America and the Mighty Avengers number 7. I know Roddy Cat's a big fan of this book. I love some of the things that happen in this book, specifically regarding Captain, the former Captain Marvel, the former Photon, the current Spectra Monica Rambeau. They do a lot of cool character development with her. They actually do a little bit of exploration into what her power set might actually be now. This is the culmination of a story that has been kind of dragging on for a while, involving a member of the Beyond Corporation. And, you know, obviously last issue, we see Next Wave, the Next Wave series kind of brought into the Marvel Universe proper. And, you know, this issue continues with that. You know, this was a fun read. I'm not, you know, I wasn't 100% sold, but I was definitely very, very happy with, you know, with what they're doing with Monica Rambeau. I really want to see that character shine in post-Secret Wars, in the post-Secret Wars Marvel Universe. Superior Iron Man number 7 was okay. It didn't exactly... lead to what we all thought it might lead to. There's still a couple of tricks inverted. Tony Stark has, you know, he still has a few tricks up his sleeve to counter some of his own countermeasures and to counter what Pepper Potts is doing. So, you know, this is an exploration of that. And, you know, we're going into the next issue, you know, looking at a showdown between Pepper and inverted Tony. Let's see, what else did I read this week? We talked about Nova. Let's see here. I'm not going to talk about Loki, Agent of Asgard. I'm still having trouble kind of comprehending what happened in that one.
I'm going to quickly get out from Joe Caramagna, The Further Travels of Wyatt Earp.
Go for it.
One came out. We just had a preview copy of it, so it wasn't the full issue, but I enjoyed it. It's a digital through Comixology or Amazon Kindle, 99 cents. It's basically a story of Wyatt Earp. starts out with a little girl kind of impersonating a claim jumper and scaring off some bad guys, and then she meets Wyatt Earp. The little girl's pretty funny. Like, Scott Koblish?
Koblish,
I think, does the art on this. Mm-hmm. He does some good panel layouts because, you know, since it's digital, he has less panels to play with per page. So he does some nice facial expressions and viewpoints of, like, how drawing a shadowy figure can make it look like a, you know, a claim-jumping man with pistols in his hands, but turns out it's actually just a girl holding some sticks shaped like guns. But I just wanted to get that out right quick, so check that out.
And the version on Amazon is more expensive, but it has more stuff in it, right?
I'm not sure.
I was thinking the Comixology one's like 99 cents, and it's just the story, but if you buy it on Amazon, it's like $2.99, but there's a whole bunch of like behind-the-scenes artwork and script stuff and like bonus material you don't get otherwise.
Interesting. Interesting, the different price point.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
Deluxe edition.
Right. All right, so that wraps up what I've read. So I think we're in Click of the Week territory.
Yeah, let's get to it. Let's give a Roddy Cat, since he's not here.
Where are those?
Send it to the folder. Radicat. His is... Oh, his was Captain America and the Mighty Avengers.
Did he say anything about it?
Yeah, Monica! That's what you guys will get that. You guys, if anyone who watched the very first Fast and Furious movie, you'll get that.
Monica! And also Monica Rambeau.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I am going to go ahead. It was a tough call, but I am going to go with Deathlok. Once again, it's really hard to beat a Nathan Edmondson book for me. I'm becoming a broken record, but it's all good.
It's so funny, like, the Nathan Edmondson fan club started with me on The Activity, and now look at where we are, right?
Yeah, and the funny thing was, I read The Activity up until it took that hiatus for about like 6 months when it disappeared.
Right.
And I just never got back into it when it came back.
Well, has it really come back?
Well,
it had like that one issue.
It stopped like at issue 12, I think it was, and it was gone for several months, and it came back with the whole Minnesota storyline.
Right.
And that's like I have those issues. There's like 4 or 5 issues from when it came back at that point that I have sitting. Just at some point I'm going to read. I just never got back to them.
Gotcha. All right. So, you know, but like I said, it's interesting to see how we've come, not full circle, but we've come a long way from there. So my click of the week, and it's, you know, it's funny how the last few months I've really, you know, kind of gone back and forth between a couple of different titles that have just really appealed to me because of how lighthearted and fun, you know, they were just fun reads, and I could just rely on them to kind of, you know, be entertaining more so than even, you know, just, you know, filling in the latest installment of Hickman Mumbo Jumbo. You know what I mean? It's interesting that we've come to that, that I've come to this point. So my pick for Click of the Week is Spider-Man and the X-Men number 5 by Elliot Kalan and, I forget the artist's name, but I mentioned him earlier. I did name drop him earlier. Shout out to this creative team. They are doing phenomenal work on this book. It's very, very funny. It's witty. The art is fantastic. You know, and it's just the timing on it is, you know, the comedic timing is just so well done. Marco Faia. And Elliot Kalan, I believe, is a writer for, is he a Daily Show writer, or am I mistaken?
It's one of those, like, it might be Daily Show. I was just thinking we need to, like, pummel his Twitter feed, and since we're a fan, have a fan of his comic on the show, see if he'll come on.
Yes. He's an American comedian and the head writer for The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. I wonder if he's going to stick around when the host change or if he's going to do something new. We'll see.
Yeah. And my click of the week is Thor number 7 from Jason Aaron and Russell Dauterman.
Nice. Very cool.
Yes, I love this series. And I hope I enjoy it even after we find out who Thor is. Because honestly I haven't given too much thought or care much about who's supposed to be under the
who the alter ego is, right?
Yeah. That'll just lead to more stories.
All right then.
Cool.
So, time for me to say our goodbyes. want to thank everyone for tuning in tonight's Comic Book Chronicles.
Yay!
Follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDogg98 and at CBCron. Roddy Cat, who is not here, can be found at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need. Dirt is at Agent, not Agent.
It's late, people.
He is at PCN underscore Dirt.
I hope so.
And Agent 70 is at Agent underscore 70 on Twitter.
There you go.
Oh, and Roddy Cat is also at News Nerds Need.
Oh, you got that, but it's all right. We'll plug him again.
Okay, that's it again. Get it again. Also go to theclicknation.com and popculturenetwork.com website. And with that, we'll be back next Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern time. Talk some more Star Wars news and Batman Superman trailer.
Maybe we'll be done with Daredevil by then, maybe.
Yeah, we'll officially be out by then, so stay tuned. YouTube.com/theclicknation. And we are the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Hey! Would you believe it? It's Doc.